Okay, so let's unpack this. For the last few years, really the big question in knowledge work has been something like, how quickly will AI get good at my job?
That was the first wave of panic.
Exactly. But now we're moving past that initial shock. We're asking a much more fundamental economic question.
Right.
If intelligence, I mean the ability to process data, write code, optimize tasks, if that's becoming cheap and fast and just abundant everywhere,
Then what's actually still valuable?
what retains its value?
Yeah.
And our sources are suggesting this isn't just, another tech upgrade. It's a massive economic restructuring.
It's a complete shift.
Value is shifting away from anything you can scale, and it's
Yeah.
moving toward qualities that require, well, real participation, presence, genuine humanity.
Things that can't be copied and pasted.
So our mission today is to cut through the noise and answer that core question for you. When intelligence overflows, what becomes scarce? And where should you focus your time, your energy, for durable value?
And to get there, we really have to start with the abundance part. We have to talk about something called the Jevons paradox.
Okay.
Now, for those unfamiliar, this isn't an AI thing specifically. It's an old economic observation that efficiency doesn't actually reduce consumption.
Right. It's so counterintuitive. You'd think if AI makes your analysts say 10 times faster, you just need fewer
You
analysts.
need fewer analysts, exactly. But what happens in reality is that we just find 10 times more work for that analyst to do. If an AI can instantly generate, I don't know, 50 white papers on a topic, we don't say, great, we're done. We say, great, now we need people and tools to make sense of those 50 papers.
So the total amount of knowledge work just
It
exploded,
explodes, and that immediately changes where the leverage point is.
which defines this whole discussion.
It does. We're just applying a pattern that you see across all big technology shifts. When X becomes abundant, Y becomes the bottleneck.
And all the value shifts to Y.
Let's use the classic examples. They make it so clear. When factory farming made food cheap and abundant, calories weren't the bottleneck anymore.
Attention to nutrition became the bottleneck. So value shifted to dietitians, personal trainers, that kind of thing.
Exactly. And then when the internet made information abundant, finding data wasn't the
It
problem.
was attention. Your attention became the scarce resource.
So value shifted to curation, to filtering, to sense making, to the people who help you avoid drowning in all that data.
So now we apply that same pattern to AI making intelligence abundant. If intelligence is the new commodity, what are the new bottlenecks?
And the research we dove into points to four very specific non-scalable qualities: wisdom, context, relationships, and embodiment.
Let's start with the one that feels the most. Oh, well, ancient. Wisdom.
Candidate one, wisdom,
Yeah.
judgment about what actually matters. And the core difference between intelligence and wisdom is it's simple, but it's profound.
I think we use them interchangeably a lot, but the sources treat them as completely different economic inputs. So what's the separation?
Intelligence is about optimization. Its job is to answer the question, how do I solve this problem? It works within the constraints you give it. And AI is brilliant at that.
Whereas wisdom just throws out the whole frame. It asks, is this the right problem to solve in the first place? It questions the constraints themselves.
Think about the business example they use. An AI can instantly tell you the most efficient, data-driven way to grow your business by 20% this quarter. It's a perfect optimization task.
Okay.
But it can't tell you whether growing your business aligns with your deepest values. It has no way of knowing if that 20% growth is worth the cost to your family time or your mental health.
That gap right there, the gap between how to do it and should you do it, that's where wisdom lives. And you can't shortcut it.
No. The sources are clear on this. It's generated through time, through experience, reflection, even suffering, making mistakes. It requires lived experience.
Which is why an AI, even if it has perfect intelligence, just lacks wisdom. It
No.
hasn't lived, it hasn't navigated real stakes over time, it hasn't felt the consequences.
It has no skin in the game, as they put it. It can simulate, but it hasn't felt.
But hold on, what if a model gets so vast that it incorporates billions of real-world outcomes? Couldn't that, I don't know, simulate a kind of wisdom?
That's a critical point. And this is where the sources bring in what they call the elder's viewpoint.
Okay.
The elder, in this context, just represents long-term generational thinking. The idea that true wisdom comes from watching what happens across generations, seeing the slow ripple effects of a decision over decades, not just analyzing immediate data.
So AI gives you the instant analysis.
It can't give you history's verdict. You need that embodied time.
That inability to shortcut time brings us right to the next quality, which is Understanding the messy reality of a situation. Context.
Candidate two. Context. Yeah. Deep understanding of a specific situation. And we have this assumption that if we just upload 10,000 documents to an AI, we've given it context.
Yeah, problem solved.
But the research shows the most important context, the stuff that really determines success or failure, is the stuff that never gets written down.
Okay, let's use the test case from the sources. You ask an advisor, human or AI, a simple question. Should we expand to a second location?
Right. So the explicit context, the stuff the AI gets easily, is all the data. Financial projections, market analysis, demographics. That's maybe 20% of the actual picture.
And the crucial tacit context, the stuff the AI completely misses, that's the human reality.
That's where the experienced consultant earns their money.
Right. They see the gap between the team's claimed capacity and their real capacity. They sense the hidden resentment between the business partners.
Or maybe that one of the founders has a health issue they haven't disclosed, or that they're really just driven by this unconscious assumption that growth always equals success.
Even if it tanks their quality of life.
Exactly. I mean, that knowledge is, it's unspoken, it's relational, emotional, historical. You can't put that in a prompt.
So AI gets the 20%. You explicitly feed it.
But it misses the 80% you don't even realize you should mention because it's so embedded in the culture and the relationships.
So in stable, simple systems, the explicit stuff is fine?
But in messy human situations, which is most of business and all of life, that tacit context is everything. That is the economic moat for certain professions.
So the work that stays valuable is the work untangling those human knots, where the unstated assumptions matter more than the stated goals.
Absolutely. Think about therapy, executive coaching, mediation, high-level strategic advising. Those roles are fundamentally designed to surface that unspoken 80%. They're highly resistant to automation.
Which brings us to the last two candidates, and they're really tightly woven together. Let's start with number three, relationships.
Relationships, or as the sources put it, trust built over time with mutual stakes. And they suggest we need to reframe the question here.
Instead of asking what work is valuable,
you should be asking what value exists only in relationship.
Ah, that's a critical distinction. It's the difference between value extraction and relational value.
Right. If you sell a product, the value is extracted. It exists outside the relationship. But think about the barn raising example.
Yeah, the community getting together to build a barn.
The tangible value is, you know, the barn. Mm-hmm. But the durable value is the strengthened bonds, the mutual trust, the deeper community that was built while building the barn. You can't extract that.
You can't put that on a balance sheet, but it's the real resource.
And you can't scale it. Which, of course, brings us to the question, can AI be my friend?
It's certainly trying. And people are forming what feel like deep attachments to chatbots. They're projecting friendship onto them.
And projection is the key word. Real friendship, real mentorship. It requires mutual vulnerability, mutual stakes, a genuine encounter where you actually change each other.
And an AI can't be changed in that way. It has no, again, no skin in the game. There are no consequences for it.
So the durable value is the stuff that requires genuine participation from both sides. Care work, mentoring, real intimacy. An AI can assist, but it can't be the relationship.
And that idea of needing to participate, to be present, it leads right into the fourth and final candidate, embodiment.
Embodiment, physical presence or somatic intelligence.
And we're not just talking about physical labor, like laying bricks. The more interesting question is what cognitive work requires a body?
Precisely. It's about somatic intelligence. It's the kind of pattern recognition that comes from lived physical experience, not just reading a data stream.
Like the classic example of the ER doc who walks into a room and just knows something is wrong way before the lab results are back.
It's a felt sense. It's a pattern recognition that's happening in their body based on years of being physically present in those situations. Or the carpenter who feels the wood grain and just knows how it will behave.
It's not a calculation.
No. And think about the nurse who's been physically present with a patient for 12 hours. She's tracking these tiny shifts in breathing, in mood, in skin tone that a monitor will never pick up. That requires embodied presence.
So the scarce resource is literally being there and being attuned.
It's the care worker sitting with a dying parent. It's the teacher who notices the quiet kids struggling in the back of the room. These things require bodies physically present and attuned to what can't be measured.
So now let's pull this all together, because these four things, wisdom, context, relationships, and embodiment, they're not really separate categories, are they?
Not at all. They converge. They're all just facets of the same core idea. non-scalable human participation.
If you try to pull them apart, the whole thing kind of collapses.
It does. Wisdom needs embodied experience. Deep context only emerges through relationship. And real relationships require embodied presence. They are completely inseparable.
And the big takeaway is that because they are inseparable, because they require our participation, they can't be scaled or extracted or replicated.
They only exist in the doing and the being.
Okay, let's run the YouTube dad example from the sources through this. Why is he still valuable when you can get generic parenting advice from an AI for free?
Because he embodies all four qualities. People want his advice. He has the wisdom because he actually lived the parenting lessons he's teaching. He has deep context because he understands the emotional world of his audience from being in the comments, from building a community. The value is the relationship itself. You trust him.
And finally, his embodiment. Just the way he shows up, his presence on camera, that's his unique, non-replicable signal.
The value is in the person, not just the information they're transferring.
Which brings us to the hard truth for anyone in knowledge work. If the value you create can be extracted from the relationship.
If someone could get the exact same result from a perfect AI as they get from you.
Your work is vulnerable. It's facing deflation.
And that's the core distinction we need to make for you, the listener. We're talking about two totally different kinds of value.
First, you have task-based value. It's extractable, it's replicable, it's automatable. It's a commodity. High volume, low margin.
And then you have relationship-based value. It's contextual. It's specific to you and the other person. It's non-transferable. This is lower volume, but it commands a much higher margin. It requires your unique human contribution.
The entire knowledge economy was built on specialized expertise, right? On what you know the W.
But when an AI knows everything, the leverage shifts. It shifts profoundly. Value moves from what you know to who you are and how you relate.
So what does this actually mean for your career, for your focus? The material we've covered really boils down to three critical questions you should be asking yourself.
First one, is the value you currently create, the service you provide, the product you sell, is it fundamentally task-based or relationship-based? And you need to be rigorously honest with yourself about that.
Okay.
Second, are you building skills that AI can learn, like optimization or content generation? Or are you building capacities AI can't have, like embodied judgment, genuine care, lived experience? You have to focus on the latter.
Yeah, the last one.
Finally, what value are you creating that requires your personal participation? If the value exists independent of you, it's vulnerable. If it only exists through a relationship with you, it's durable. That's the new economic moat.
So the biggest conclusion here isn't just about learning to use AI tools. It's a much more fundamental shift in how we even approach work.
It's a move away from scalable tasks and toward non-scalable participatory relationship building.
No, but the sources point out a problem. This kind of relationship work is durable, but it doesn't scale easily, which leaves us with one final sort of provocative thought.
Go on.
If our whole economic system is built on optimizing individual tasks, and that optimization is now becoming free, how do we build collective systems that still work when those old rules collapse? What happens when relationships become the only durable form of economic and social value?
That's the challenge of the next generation, isn't it?